From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air.
I just got an invitation through the mail.
Your presence requested this evening. It's formal. Top hat, white tie, and tail.
This is the centennial of Fred Astaire's birth. On today's Fresh Air, we celebrate with pianist Peter Mitten, Will Friedwald, who wrote the liner notes for two double CD Astaire soundtrack collections, and Stanley Donen, who directed Astaire in the musicals Funny Face and Royal Wedding. A tribute to Fred Astaire coming up on Fresh Air.
I'm dudin' up my shirt front, putting in the shirt studs, polishing my nails. I'm stepping out, my dear, to breathe an atmosphere that simply reeks with class.
First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Jan Johnson. Yugoslavia today announced it is pulling troops out of Kosovo, but the Clinton administration is skeptical. NPR's Mara Liasson reports.
White House Press Secretary Joe Lockhart says even if there had been a pullout, that would not be enough to meet NATO's demands to end the bombing. NATO wants Yugoslavia to stop the ethnic cleansing and allow a NATO-led security force to escort the refugees back home. Earlier today, President Clinton dealt with another complication of the air war, apologizing to China for an errant NATO bomb that hit the Chinese embassy in Belgrade on Friday.
I regret this, but I think it is very important to draw a clear distinction between a tragic mistake and a deliberate act of ethnic cleansing. And the United States will continue to make that distinction.
The president has tried to telephone China's president, Jiang Zemin, and apologize directly, but Jiang has refused to take Mr. Clinton's calls. Mara Liasson, NPR News, The White House.
Russian envoy Viktor Chernomyrdin has arrived in Beijing for talks on Kosovo. It was the third day of street protests in China over the NATO bombing of China's embassy in Belgrade. Three Chinese citizens were killed and more than 20 injured. NPR's Mary Kay Magstad reports from Beijing.
China today got part of what protesters have been demanding, an apology from President Clinton. But China says that's not enough. It wants a full investigation into why China's embassy in Belgrade was bombed last week and punishment for those responsible. Russia has also expressed indignation about the bombing. Russian envoy Viktor Chernomyrdin arrived in Beijing today and is to talk with Chinese leaders tomorrow about how to resolve the Kosovo crisis. Meanwhile, China's state-controlled media are continuing a barrage of anti-American and anti-NATO rhetoric, and thousands of sometimes violent protesters continue to take to the streets. The U.S. Embassy says Westerners have been roughed up in Beijing and in other Chinese cities. The advice to Americans in China is to lay low. Mary Kay Magstad, NPR News, Beijing.
Marine Captain Richard Ashby has been dismissed from the service and ordered to spend 6 months in jail for interfering with the investigation of last year's deadly cable car accident in the Italian Alps. 20 people died when Ashby's jet sliced the cable. He was acquitted earlier of manslaughter, but convicted of helping to hide a videotape of the flight. In Memphis, Tennessee, a legal victory for tobacco companies. Jurors took 4 hours to deliberate claims that three of the country's biggest cigarette makers were responsible for the deaths of three smokers. The jury found in favor of the tobacco industry. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 24.34 today to close at 11,007.25. From Washington, this is National Public Radio News. President Clinton says it was a fruitful discussion on youth violence. Today's White House meeting of representatives from the gun industry and Hollywood. Mr. Clinton says the U.S. will have to overcome old ways of doing business to ease the imprint of violent messages on children. In New York, alleged police brutality victim Abner Louima was back on the witness stand today, where he faced tough cross-examination by the defense. Louima has accused four police officers with violating his civil rights. From the Brooklyn Federal Courthouse, NPR's Melissa Block reports.
In an exchange punctuated by angry objections from federal prosecutors, defense attorney Marvin Kornberg pounded away at inconsistencies in Abner Louima's story. Louima admitted he lied in early interviews with the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office, explaining inconsistencies in the 1997 grand jury testimony he gave. Louima said he was on medication then and his memory wasn't clear. Referring to the so-called dream team of lawyers who represent Louima in his civil lawsuit against the city, Kornberg asked Louima testily, "Has your memory gotten better since you retained Mr. Scheck, Cochran, and Neufeld for your $150 million lawsuit?" Louima replied, "They're not the reason for my memory to get better now. I'm more peaceful now, and I have a better chance to think." Kornberg, "You were peaceful enough to commit perjury." The government attorney's objection was sustained. Melissa Block, NPR News at the Brooklyn Federal Courthouse.
The Air Force says a communication satellite launched into the wrong orbit last week is flying higher, but the Orion spacecraft remains far short of its intended path. Another launch has been postponed for at least a week. I'm Jan Johnson, National Public Radio News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Midland Company, bringing NovaSoy brand isoflavones to consumers throughout the United States. On the web at admworld.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Fred Astaire was born 100 years ago today. Let's celebrate his centennial.
Bad news, go away, call round someday in March or May. I can't be bothered now. My bonds and shares may fall downstairs. Who cares? Who cares? I'm dancing and I can't be bothered now. I'm up among the stars. All earthly things I found. I'm throwing off the bars that held me down. I'll pay the piper when I get riper just now. I shan't, because you see I'm dancing and I can't be bothered now.
Fred Astaire was surely the greatest dancer of the movie musical era and the man who most epitomized elegance and sophistication. In his musicals, he introduced songs by Irving Berlin, the Gershwins, Cole Porter, Harry Warren, and Harold Arlen that have become standards. Many of the soundtrack versions of his songs are collected on two recent double CD collections on Rhino Records. The first featuring his performances from his 1930s musicals with Ginger Rogers, the second his performances in MGM films from the late 30s through the 50s, including Ziegfeld Follies, Easter Parade, The Barclays of Broadway, Royal Wedding, and The Bandwagon. My guest Will Friedwald wrote the liner notes for both collections. He's the author of Sinatra, The Song Is You, and Jazz Singing, and he co-wrote Tony Bennett's recent autobiography. Will Friedwald, welcome back to Fresh Air. As you write in your liner notes, Fred Astaire's singing, no less than his dancing, signifies one of the high points of American culture. I really agree with you. He's most famous for his dancing, but he's just a great singer. What do you love about his singing?
Well, to me, what's fascinating about Astaire is when you think about the notion of virtuosity, obviously he was a virtuoso dancer. When it came to singing, it was quite a different situation in that he did not have a virtuoso's voice. He did not have, you know, one of these great, melodious, wonderful voices that could just sustain notes for as long as he wanted and a lot of wind and a lot of chops and, you know, a lot of vocal resources, as it were. But what he did have was this wonderful sense of rhythm, this wonderful sense of drama, and this wonderful sense of storytelling that he made it all work for him. And the way he kind of gets around not having a lot of wind power and not being able to sustain notes is to use what we could describe as jazz techniques. I mean, he really uses his gift for rhythm, and he makes everything swing and delivers what are really great vocal performances, even without a really, really, you know, outstanding voice. And I always say that I would rather listen to Fred Astaire sing than a lot of guys that have big, you know, wonderful voices. I mean, I'd rather listen to Astaire than, you know, Mario Lanza or somebody like that, just because, you know, he knows what to do with it and he knows how to put the song over.
I really agree with you. And it's funny, you know, in a lot of his early musicals, there's a kind of, he's compared to a more fine arts type of trained singer with the big baritone voice. And Fred Astaire always comes out ahead in that, because the other guy is always like a really square band leader or a square singer or a square
right.
of one sort or another.
Right. There's characters like that in the Gay Divorcee and in A Dancing Lady. He's in the same scene with Nelson Eddy, who's also making that. They both made their debuts in that film. And in Broadway Melody of 1940, he's it's Douglas MacPhail that gets to introduce I Concentrate on You, not Astaire, which is a major crime. And, you know, Douglas MacPhail has this big, big operatic voice. And you come away from that movie not even realizing the song is in the movie. It just makes no impression on you. Whereas everything that Fred Astaire does, no matter how minor the song, you know, you just, you know, that's indelibly etched in your memory.
You wrote a book about Frank Sinatra, and you co-wrote Tony Bennett's autobiography. They both admired Astaire. In fact, Tony Bennett did a whole album of songs originated by Astaire. Do you know what they particularly liked about Astaire?
It's funny. With Sinatra, it's a little harder. It's not as apparent. I mean, for one thing, Sinatra never, you know, made an album in tribute to Astaire. I don't think he ever made an album in tribute to another performer. But we do know that Sinatra adored Fred Astaire just by the songs he picked. I mean, virtually anything that Astaire sang, you know, Sinatra later came back and sort of rescued from obscurity. I mean, all those wonderful songs that were written for Astaire, they might not be the standards that they are now had not Sinatra gone back to them when he did 10 and 20 years later. And you can easily compile multiple CDs of Sinatra singing Fred Astaire. With Tony, it's certainly more overt. Like you mentioned, he did that whole album in tribute to Astaire. And Steppin' Out, which, you know, sort of is, you know, Tony's mantra in the MTV generation, was, of course, you know, a Fred Astaire song, which Tony always acknowledges. And Tony really worshipped Astaire. He was one of his show business heroes. And in fact, when Tony lived in California in the mid-70s, he really did not like Hollywood. He really was not a Hollywood kind of guy. But the only thing he enjoyed about it was being able to live a few blocks away from Fred Astaire and to see him almost on a daily basis. And Tony just loved the way that Astaire put a song over. He just loved, you know, what he did with music, and he loved the fact that so many wonderful, wonderful songwriters wrote for Astaire. And, you know, again, like I say, Astaire was always one of Tony's showbiz heroes.
Well, why don't we hear a song that both Sinatra and Tony Bennett have recorded that was originated by Fred Astaire. This is Change Partners. And this is one of the records included on the box sets that you wrote the liner notes for, Will. This is Fred Astaire, Change Partners.
Must you dance every dance with the same fortunate man? You have danced with him since the music began. Won't you change partners and dance with me? Must you dance quite so close with your lips touching his face? Can't you see I'm longing to be in his place? Won't you change partners and dance with me? Ask him to sit this one out, and while you're alone, I'll tell the waiter to tell him he's wanted on the telephone. You've been lucky.
That was Fred Astaire singing Change Partners from the soundtrack of the 1938 film Carefree. Music and lyrics by Irving Berlin. And my guest is Will Friedwald, who wrote the liner notes to two double CDs featuring Fred Astaire recordings from his movies. Will, you were mentioning that, you know, a lot of the Frank Sinatra songbook features songs that were originated by Fred Astaire. And in fact, Sinatra's signature saloon ballad is a song that was originated by Astaire, although it's not really a song much associated with Fred Astaire, and I'm thinking of One for My Baby. Tell us a little bit about the context that Fred Astaire sang it in the film, The Sky's the Limit.
It's interesting that The Sky's the Limit is really a minor Astaire film, if there is such a thing, and it's his last for RKO, and it doesn't, you know, the production values and story and everything are really not, you know, they're really a far cry from sort of the classic Fred and Ginger pictures, or even the later, you know, the big sort of spectacular Fred Astaire MGM pictures, which were to come later. This is sort of, you know, one of the low points in his cinematic career. And, It has a wonderful score, however. I mean, in every possible instance, you know, Astaire never gets less than the really best songs that could possibly be written. And because nobody knows this movie, I mean, people also forget that My Shining Hour, which is a marvelous standard, is from that film. And even the songs that are not that well-known, like I've Got a Lot in Common with You, it never became a standard, but it's an excellent song. It's a wonderful Arlen Mercer score. And One for My Baby is sort of buried in the middle of it. And the treatment is essentially different from Sinatra in that Astaire keeps the beat going. Like Crosby, and like a lot of singers from sort of the pre-Sinatra era, they really weren't able to think in terms of rubato. They really, you know, when it comes to a ballad, they even do the love songs so that you can dance to them. And there is dancing in this number, although it's primarily a vocal piece, but Astaire does keep that beat going. And to me, it's fascinating that 30 years after that, one of the people that did remember the way Astaire sang that song was Sammy Davis Jr. in that famous video concert that was shown a couple of years ago. Actually, it was shown around the time of Sinatra's death, of the Rat Pack performing at Dismas House in St. Louis. They show, you know, in Sammy Davis Jr.'s act is his uncanny impression of Astaire doing One for My Baby, you know, in that film. So obviously that did make some kind of impression. And obviously that is, you know, that's sort of the groundwork of that song becoming the standard, the foundation of that. And Sinatra, you know, essentially what he did with every piece of music he found, he amplified on it. You know, he built on that foundation. And even though he didn't introduce it, of course, you know, he so completely transformed it, you know, so completely made it his own that, you know, particularly in that case, you really do forget that Fred Astaire ever sang it because, you know, Sinatra really, you know, claimed ownership of it, and it's impossible to associate One for My Baby with any other singer. And to me, that shows, you know, the essence of what made, you know, Sinatra different and how he built on what had come before him in, you know, just in that decision to do it so rubato and to make it so personal and so introspective, you know, by doing all those things with the tempo.
Yeah, the Sinatra version is a much more despairing, depressed version, I think, than the Astaire version is.
Although, when Sinatra does it, there is this element of self-deprecation and kidding. Although it's, you know, it's more of a humorous kind of a piece when Astaire does it, obviously, because it's in time. But, you know, I do think that there is that element. I mean, that's one of the things that makes Sinatra's ballad so poignant, is that he doesn't forget that there's a sense of humor. I mean, he never does take himself all that seriously, even in those kind of dark moments. And that little bit of levity that's in it, you know, just from doing those Mercer lines, like, you know, you never know it, but buddy, I'm a poet. You know, that's just such a silly line. And you know, that kind of makes it all the more grim, you know, that he is admitting that little bit of levity in there. It makes it all the more darker somehow.
Well, let's hear Fred Astaire's version of One for My Baby, and this is from the soundtrack of the 1943 film The Sky's the Limit, music by Harold Arlen, lyrics by Johnny Mercer.
It's 2:45. There's no one in the place except you and me. So set 'em up, Joe. I've got a little story you ought to know. We're drinking, my friend, to the end of a brief episode. Make it one for my baby and one more for the road. I got the routine, so drop another nickel in the machine. I'm feeling so bad, I wish you'd make the music dreamy and sad. Could tell you a lot, but that's not in a gentleman's code. Make it one for my baby and one more for the road. You'd never know it, but buddy, I'm a kind of poet, and I got a lot of things to say. And when I'm gloomy, you simply gotta listen to me until it's talked away.
Fred Astaire from the film The Sky's the Limit. My guest is Will Friedwald, and he wrote the liner notes to two Fred Astaire double CDs, one featuring his recordings from RKO movies and the other his recordings from MGM movies. I still think, Will, it sounds so disorienting to hear that song as a kind of jaunty ballad.
Yeah, I would go along with that. One thing that's not really clear from listening is that every eight bars, when the sort of like the piano comes in or you hear kind of a transitional thing, it's to show Astaire that he's down and out, he's pub crawling, and every eight bars it switches to a different bar. So every eight bars equals a different bar, come to think of it.
Oh, that's good.
If you want to think
funny.
Of it that
right.
way.
I'll have to rent the movie. I confess I've never seen this one. Do you know the story?
Well, Barney Bagard is... there's one scene with Freddie Slack and his orchestra, and you can see Barney Bagard is sitting in the reed section. He had just joined the Freddie Slack band after leaving Duke Ellington after like 15 years. And the other point about that is that by this time, in this film and in Second Chorus, which is really the worst film Astaire ever made. It's really, you know, got nothing to recommend it other than Astaire singing and dancing, which is, of course, a considerable asset. But Astaire wanted to make both of those movies just because he loved jazz so much, and Second Chorus gave him the chance to work with Artie Shaw, and Sky's the Limit, you know, gave him the chance to work with Freddie Slack, who also had a great band. And that was his, you know, sort of his primary motivation, certainly in the course of Second Chorus, just because he wanted to work with Artie Shaw, which is, you know, says a lot for Astaire's taste in music. I guess in that particular case, it even overrode his taste in the rest of the movie.
My guest is Will Friedwald. We'll listen to more Astaire recordings after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Will Friedwald. He wrote the liner notes for two double CDs of Astaire songs from the soundtracks of his films. Many of the great composers, many of the Pantheon composers wrote for Astaire. Berlin, the Gershwins, Jerome Kern, Harry Warren, Harold Arlen, Schwartz and Dietz. Do you know if they particularly liked writing for Astaire?
I know that they loved Astaire because he really knew how to put their songs over. He really knew how to make a song a hit, in fact. I mean, you know, if Astaire sang it, it became a hit. And that was, you know, one of the realities of that period. And virtually everything Astaire touched, you know, just by virtue of his doing it, you know, gained importance. And virtually the way you define a major composer versus a non-major composer is the fact of whether or not they wrote for Astaire. And that, you know, extended to virtually everyone. And the only exception to that were Rodgers and Hart, who never had the opportunity, for whatever reason, to write an Astaire vehicle. Although we know at one point they wrote the show On Your Toes, which was a very dance-driven musical in 1937. They originally wrote that with Fred Astaire in mind, perhaps hoping that he would come back to Broadway, which he did not do. And, you know, he was not in the stage or even the screen version. Actually, in the screen version, it was Eddie Albert, that wonderful dancer who played the lead. But, you know, it's interesting to listen to the songs in On Your Toes, like the title song, for instance, and imagine Astaire doing them. And I know that, like, Cole Porter relished the challenge of writing for Astaire because of his limited vocal range. I mean, it was sort of like the way Duke Ellington wrote for Johnny Hodges or wrote for Paul Gonzalez or Clark Terry or somebody like that. He knew what Astaire could sing and what he couldn't sing, so he wrote those songs very specifically for him. If you listen to the verse to Night and Day, 99% of all verses written, you know, in the great age of Ten Pin Alley are slow and out of tempo, and, you know, there's not a lot of beat to them. I mean, you're supposed to not get to the beat until you get to the refrain. The way they wrote for Astaire was to start with the beat right in the verse, and most of the verses written for Astaire, they swing from the very, very beginning. You know, they don't wait. And the verse to Night and Day is a great example of that because it's all rhythm. I mean, 90% of the verse is all the same note. It's just the same note written over and over, like the beat, beat, beat. I mean, you know, he even says it right there. It's all about the beat, beat, beat. And that's what Astaire does, and that's the way he puts that song over. And, you know, Cole Porter was writing very specifically for that voice and that sense of time.
Why don't we hear it? This is from the soundtrack of the film The Gay Divorcee from 1934, Night and Day, music and lyrics by Cole Porter.
like the beep, beep, beat of the tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall, like the tick, tick, tock of the stately clock as it stands against the wall, like the drip, drip, drip of the raindrops when the summer shower is through. So a voice within me keeps repeating, you, 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 night and day, you are the one. Only you beneath the moon and under the sun. Whether near to me or far, it's no matter, darling, where you are, I think of night and day, day and night. Why is it so that this longing for you follows wherever I go? In the roaring traffic's boom, in the silence of my lonely room, I think of you. Night and day, night and day, under the hide of me, there's at home such a hungry yearning burning inside of me, and its torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and day.
That's Fred Astaire singing Cole Porter's Night and Day from the soundtrack of The Gay Divorcee. My guest is Will Friedwald. And Will, I think that song just is a perfect amplification on what you were saying before about how Fred Astaire made up for his lack of vocal range with his brilliant rhythm and phrasing.
Yeah, you could certainly say that's a textbook example of that. And, you know, to talk about the Astaire influence on Sinatra and other singers, I mean, Night and Day is practically Sinatra's whole career. He recorded at least six different versions of it, and it's a song that he kept returning to again and again, and always with a new arrangement, always a new treatment. And in the most famous case where he does do the verse, which he didn't always do, on the 1961 Sinatra in Strings, he makes a point to take that verse and, you know, take what was written in time and put it in rubato. I mean, to make it different from Astaire, he takes that verse and puts it out of tempo, just to put his own stamp on it, you know, which is contrary to the way it was written, but you know, just for him to make this new interpretation. And it takes work to put that verse out of tempo.
Will Friedwald wrote the liner notes for the film soundtrack CDs Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers at RKO and Fred Astaire at MGM. Friedwald will be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, booksellers since 1873. Online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN. By the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. And by Serta, maker of the Serta Perfect Sleeper Mattress, helping generations of Americans to sleep since 1931. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
My way by myself, like walking under a cloud.
Coming up, film director Stanley Donen talks about working with Astaire on the musicals Funny Face and Royal Wedding. Pianist Peter Minton plays a song from an Astaire film, and we listen back to more of Astaire's singing with Will Friedwald.
To apply myself and teach my heart how to sing, I'll go my way by myself, like a bird on the wing. I'll face the unknown. I'll build a world of my own. No one knows better than I myself. I'm by myself alone. Da 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 da.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross with more of our tribute to Fred Astaire. Today is the centennial of his birth. Many of his great song and dance numbers are collected on two double CDs of music from his soundtracks. My guest Will Friedwald wrote the liner notes. He's also the author of Jazz Singing and Sinatra, The Song Is You. Fred Astaire and his sister Adele performed as kids on the vaudeville circuit. Then they were a team in Broadway musicals. Fred Astaire's sister Adele Astaire left the stage to get married, and then shortly after Fred was teamed with Ginger Rogers. Do you know how Fred Astaire was matched with Ginger Rogers for the screen?
It sort of was a fluke. They had known each other in New York, and Astaire had actually worked on some of the staging, you know, I think unofficially and just as a favor perhaps to the Gershwins and some of the producers. And in Ginger's breakthrough show Girl Crazy, Astaire helped out with some of the choreography. And you know, one thing that possibly isn't said as much as it should is that Astaire really was the choreographer, or the co-choreographer, as it were, of all of his big numbers, both on Broadway and in the films. And that's why, I mean, they are so consistent from number to number, from film to film, from studio to studio. It's because, you know, generally it's Astaire, you know, himself, you know, mapping out his own choreography. And even had he never danced, he surely would be one of the great names in dance, just for, you know, what he was able to do in terms of setting up dances for himself and others. And he did work on this, you know, sort of unofficially on Girl Crazy, and that's at the point they first met. And while they were still both on Broadway, they actually were, I don't want to say romantic, but they, you know, they went on a few dates together and got to know each other. By the time they reunited in Hollywood, Astaire had gotten married at that point, and so they weren't sort of together on that level, you know, socially anymore. But, you know, they obviously had this kind of deep feeling for each other that comes through when they dance. I mean, it can't all be acting, all that kind of, that passionate interchange that they do. I mean, if it is acting, it's certainly the greatest acting job I've ever seen.
Though I've heard it said that they didn't get along.
It's you always hear those kind of two rumors, one that they were having an affair, the other that they hated each other's guts. And I think it's obviously not either one. Obviously, they liked each other and were grateful to the other for sort of giving them that movie identity. And I think after a while, you know, they did tend to sort of resent being, you know, dependent on each other. And they each did want to establish their own solo careers, which interestingly happened much more quickly for Ginger Rogers. She got an Oscar in 1940 for Kitty Foyle. And at that point, Astaire had really not, you know, found his next thing. I mean, he had to go through a couple of sort of interesting experimental movies before, you know, he gets to the next great phase of his career. And then, you know, of course, Astaire is flying high throughout most of the 40s and 50s and makes another classic string of musicals that are, you know, with equally wonderful songs and equally wonderful pictures, you know, pretty much.
This would be a great time to hear a Fred and Ginger duet. And this is from the movie Swing Time, which was made in 1936. And the song is Pick Yourself Up by Jerome Kern with a lyric by Dorothy Fields. And this song's a lot of fun. In this movie, Ginger Rogers is a dance teacher. And she doesn't realize that Fred Astaire is a great
Astaire
dancer.
Right.
So he's kind of like goofing on her. He goes to her dance hall and asks for some dance lessons and doesn't let on that he can dance. In fact, he makes it seem like he's a real clod.
Pretends to be as awkward as a camel, and that's not the worst.
So he's falling as she's teaching him how to dance, and that leads right into the song Pick Yourself Up. Will, anything else you want to say about it before we hear it?
It's just, you know, if you can use music and dance to tell a story, I mean, to be able just to take, you know, the simple art of singing and dancing and weave something out of it that's greater than, you know, the individual elements. I mean, this is such a classic example of a story. You know, you get the whole picture, the whole plot of the whole film is can be, you know, symbolized, boiled down to this one number. And it's just an amazing marriage of words, music, dance, story, narrative, acting, comedy. I mean, everything you would want. It's just in this one little 5-minute segment. And, you know, you just stand up and cheer when it's over.
Here's Fred and Ginger.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, turn. 1, 2, 3, turn. Let's try it again. Get it. All right. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, turn. 1, 2.
I'm getting it.
Yes. Again. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, turn. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Now you've got it. I can't teach you anything.
Please, teacher, teach me something. Nice, teacher, teach me something. I'm as awkward as a camel. That's not the worst. My 2 feet haven't met yet, but I'll be the teacher's pet yet, 'cause I'm going to learn to dance or burst.
Nothing's impossible, I have found. When my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off, start all over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip. Be grateful for a pleasant trip and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. Work like a soul inspired till the battle of the day is won. You may be sick and tired, but you'll be a man, my son. Will you remember the famous men who had to fall to rise again? So take a deep breath, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.
I'll get some self-assurance if your endurance is great. I'll learn by easy stages if you're courageous and wait. To feel the strength I want to, I must hang on to your hand. Maybe by the time I'm 50, I'll get up and do a nifty.
All right, I'll show you again. Now remember, 3 steps to the left, 3 steps to the right.
There's the right.
And turn. Right. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
I know,
1, 2, 3.
Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.
Listen, no one could teach you to dance in a million years. Take my advice and save your money.
Now, how did you say that last step went? Yes. Shall we try it right through?
Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers from the soundtrack of Swing Time. Wilf Riedwald is my guest. Well, I'm wondering what you think of Ginger Rogers singing.
She's a fine singer. But it's not like her singing isn't magical. I mean, you know, she could certainly put a song over and that's fine. But I feel the same way about Gene Kelly. They're not altogether satisfying as a purely oral experience. I mean, when you see them up there singing and dancing, it's wonderful, but you really wouldn't want to listen to a lot of Ginger Rogers records. And she knew that, and so did Gene Kelly. I mean, they did not make a lot of records, which was fine. The only other singers besides Astaire that you really might want to hear are, you know, maybe Bojangles Robinson, although he didn't make a lot of records, or the Nicholas Brothers. It's just they both could, you know, sing enough to get by. But Astaire is really the only one of those dancers that is outstanding as a purely audio experience. I mean, you really could. One of the great regrets of, I think, of Fred Astaire's career is that he didn't take his own singing seriously enough or think it was important enough or value it enough to make more records. I mean, essentially the records he did make are of the songs he sang in films, and I really think he could have had a whole recording career where he did all kinds of other songs. He could have done all kinds of things, I think, just as a vocalist. But sadly, he didn't do that. And even when in the 50s, when he came back and made that marvelous jazz album with the stars of jazz at the Philharmonic. Unfortunately, he limited it mainly to songs he had introduced on the stage and on screen. And I always regret that after that album came out and was so well received that he didn't just record, do what Ella Fitzgerald did, make a Gershwin songbook of songs that, you know, the Gershwins had not written for him. Because I really think he had the vocal resources, as it were, the vocal wherewithal just to go out and sing anything.
Well, Wilfried Wald, a pleasure to talk with you about Fred Astaire. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. And happy birthday, Fred.
Wilfried Wald wrote the liner notes for the movie soundtrack CDs Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers at RKO and Fred Astaire at MGM. Let's listen to a song from Astaire's 1952 jazz session on Verve Records that Will mentioned.
Heaven, I'm in heaven. And my heart beats so that I can hardly speak. And I seem to find the happiness I seek. When we're out together, dancing cheek to cheek.
Coming up, our Astaire tribute continues with pianist Peter Minton and director Stanley Donen. This is Fresh Air. Pianist Peter Minton is immersed in music from the movies. He knows hundreds of well-known and obscure songs from musicals and performs 6 months a year at Bemelman's Bar in Manhattan's Carlyle Hotel, the hotel where Bobby Short performs. Minton has a new CD coming out in a few weeks. He's a great admirer of Fred Astaire. We invited him to play a song from an Astaire film. What influence did Fred Astaire have on you musically?
Well, he certainly was a stickler for keeping rhythm and playing with rhythm. And you've probably noticed in some of his dance routines, he does things like tapping his cigarette or his watch or lighting a cigarette or just the way he moved furniture was rhythmic. And just a very fascinating person to watch. And he also made it easier for people like me who don't have good voices to sing, because he didn't have a powerful and a kind of voice that sustained long notes like James Melton or Lawrence Tibbett. but everyone loved listening to him sing.
I'm going to ask you to start with a piano solo that is a song from the Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers movie Swing Time from the mid-1930s. Tell us a little bit about the piece before you play it.
Well, Swing Time has a score by Jerome Kern and Dorothy Fields, and it is really one of the greatest films because it has so many hits. It's got Pick Yourself Up, The Way You Look Tonight, which won the Academy Award for Best Song, and A Fine Romance, Bojangles of Harlem, Never Gonna Dance, and this waltz in Swing Time, which was put together by Hal Bourne, the Fred Astaire's pianist at the time, and Robert Russell Bennett, the arranger for the film, from melodies that are in the film already. You will hear little snippets of those aforementioned songs in this waltz and Swing Time. Thank you.
Peter Minton performing in our studio. We recorded an entire concert, which will feature in a few weeks on Fresh Air, when his new CD, Yours for a Song, is released.
He loves, and she loves, and they love, so why can't you love, and I love too?
That's Fred Astaire from the 1957 musical Funny Face. Stanley Donen directed Funny Face, as well as the 1951 Astaire musical Royal Wedding. Donen also directed Gene Kelly's most famous film, Singing in the Rain. Donen will be the master of ceremonies at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Centennial Tribute to Astaire, May 27th in New York. You were about 26 when you first worked with Fred Astaire.
I think 25.
25, even younger. The movie was Royal Wedding.
Yes.
What did it mean to you to work with Fred Astaire then?
Well, it was probably the most extraordinary sort of circumstance of my life, since my whole connection to movies and all of show business is an absolutely direct result of having seen Fred Astaire in Flying Down to Rio when I was 9 years old, and it changed my life. It directed every interest in everything I was doing from that moment until this very day. I have been sort of, it's a big word, but I suppose it's right, inspired by Fred Astaire. And my admiration for him continues to grow with time. So when the opportunity came to actually direct a movie in which he was the star, I was, for a simple word, flabbergasted and thrilled, and certainly in awe of the problems and the responsibility to try and do something that I thought was worthy of him and his great talent.
What was it about Fred Astaire and Flying Down to Rio that had such a big impact on you?
I wish I knew exactly, but it was his grace, his art, his ease, his elegance, his lightness, his ebullience, his charm, his musical gifts, his singing, his dancing. I mean, the man is the one in the world. There's no one like him.
Did you want him to know how significant he was to you when you first took on the job of directing him?
I tried once to tell him, and he really didn't want to hear it. And I subsequently tried once again, and he just didn't want to know. He was a very retiring man, and he felt he did what he did, and that was what his job was, and he didn't want to know that.
Is there a moment in Royal Wedding or Funny Face in which you felt you really were capturing that Fred Astaire magic in a special way?
Well, I don't know that, because you put the question that I was capturing it, that he was capturing it in a special way, perhaps. There is a moment in Funny Face, which the moment of filming it, I will never forget. We were on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, and it was a Sunday, which was the only day we were allowed to film right on the Champs-Élysées, looking at the Arc de Triomphe. And the scene was that Fred Astaire was to get out of a taxi, which we had hired, of course, for the scene, and walk up into a closer view of him in the camera, and then suddenly the music would hit and he would start to walk in rhythmically and sing rhythmically, and there was Fred Astaire singing and dancing on the Champs-Élysées to this song, and the playback was playing, and it happened for the first time, and you know, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and it is a moment that I will always remember, and when I see it in the movie I still get chills from it.
My guest is film director Stanley Donen. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Denley Donnan, directed two Fred Astaire musicals, Funny Face and Royal Wedding. When you work with Fred Astaire, it was in the 1950s. How do you think Astaire of the 50s compared with Fred Astaire of the 1930s when he made the movies with Ginger Rogers?
Funnily enough, I've been looking at all of the films lately, and Fred Astaire managed to get better and better as he went along. I forget the date of Funny Face, which was the last picture I did with him, but he was certainly remarkable, and his agility, his expertise, his dance was as good as it ever was. He only got better, both singing and dancing.
1957, by the way.
1957, thank you.
One of the most famous dance sequences of his is one that you directed, which is the sequence where he dances on the ceiling.
Right.
Would you tell us how you did that?
You mean how we accomplished it?
Yeah, and this was in the film Royal Wedding.
Well, if the listeners can imagine putting an entire room inside of a giant wheel and on what we know as the floor, attaching the camera to the floor so that the room is going to turn slowly and the camera is going to turn with it. But the camera doesn't see outside the four walls, or is in fact the six walls, the seven walls. Everything but the back wall is viewed by the camera, assuming it's looking toward the end of a room. As the room turns, the camera is unaware, in the sense that the room is turning. We've made all of the draperies and any soft fabric, anything in the room that seemed as though it was simply resting on a table, was actually screwed to the table, and the table screwed to the floor, and the chairs screwed to the floor, and the draperies glued to wood behind them. So when the room turned, nothing moved, nothing apparently moved. And as this room turned and the camera turned with it, the camera didn't see that the room was moving. And that made Fred Astaire able to, as the side wall became the floor, it made him able to walk or climb up the side wall, it appeared, and so on, the ceiling and down the other side. And that was the technique to accomplish the idea. The problem was timing it and getting Fred to do it so that it didn't look like gravity was throwing him against the wall as the room was turning under him. And so endless rehearsal was needed to accomplish the timing and the movement and make it rhythmic and so on. And so weeks and weeks of rehearsal inside this giant wheel. Actually, when the moment came to film it, it only took us around 2 hours to do the whole sequence, because once it was done.
Whose idea was it to do it in the first place?
Well, I think it's my idea. There have been other people who said they thought it was their idea, but I have a memory of thinking of the idea. I don't think it's a particularly an amazing thought, because Fred Astaire epitomizes a person who can defy gravity. You wouldn't think of doing that with someone who had a certain weight to them, that it would seem inconceivable, unless you wanted it to be an inconceivable. But my thought about it was that Fred Astaire naturally could dance around the ceiling. Everything he had done in his entire life demonstrated that he was the one person who could do that.
Most of us have only seen Fred Astaire on camera, and I'm wondering if he had that same elegance and grace and constant sense of time and rhythm when he was off camera.
You mean when he was in real life?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think what you see of Fred Astaire in film is a real representation of him as a person, his lightness, his charm, his elegance, his ability. And he was, I remember doing a scene in Funny Face where he danced with an umbrella, and I said in rehearsal, why don't we, for he was doing it with the umbrella closed, I said, why don't we try with the umbrella open, see if anything amazing will happen. So he did, and he said, no, I don't think so. And when he closed it, he rolled the umbrella in a wonderfully rhythmic way, zap, 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 put the string around it, and it was done. And it was a remarkable piece of business that was staggering to see. So I said to him, my God, I've never seen anyone do that with an umbrella in my life. How is it that you could do that? And he said, I guess I've practiced it in other times. he just had this amazing ability.
Well, Stanley Donen, I thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, thanks for spending some of Fred Astaire's centennial with us.
Great. I'm thrilled to do it.
Stanley Donen directed the Fred Astaire musicals Funny Face and Royal Wedding. We'll close our centennial tribute to Astaire with Astaire and Audrey Hepburn in Funny Face.
It's wonderful.
It's wonderful.
It's marvelous.
It's marvelous.
That you should care for me.
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our senior producer today was Roberta Shurrock. Bob Purdick is our engineer. Dorothy Therabee is our administrative assistant. Alan Tu directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
To see.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From Saab, designing cars with a philosophy that performance and safety go hand in hand. Information available at www.saabusa.com. And from Back Bay Books, publishers of Philistines at the Hedgerow, Passion and Property in the Hamptons by Stephen Gaines. Available in paperback and as a Time Warner audiobook. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Steve Reich joins us for a retrospective of his music. We'll also listen to music from the new CD, Reich Remixed, featuring DJs' remixes of his compositions. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.